If everyone is ready, we can begin. Mr. Dossi.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Planning Commission. Good to see you all. Thank you for all the time that you give us. I try to remind myself to thank you for that, because these folks in the audience may not be aware, but your pay for today is exactly what I get paid for being a parent of two little kids, which is exactly nothing. So you are volunteering your time, and I agree. I'm going to make this really quick. You have a fairly substantial regular agenda today, so I'm going to jump straight to the Board of County Commissioners action report. We have four items on there. The first one was a pre-development site grading, that's called early grading. That was for Winding Walk, Meridian Ranch. That's not something that comes to the Planning Commission. It goes straight to the Board of County Commissioners. That was heard as a consent item and approved 4-0 by the board. Second one was a grant minor subdivision. That was something that was brought to you as a consent item, state of consent item. You all approved it unanimously 7-0, and the Board of County Commissioners also approved it 4-0. The Meridian Ranch sketch plan amendment, which you had some discussion about. A lot of it was about densities and change of uses. Again, Meridian Ranch is one of the larger developments in the county. This was for a very substantial portion of that. I think it's for every part of that that's remaining in Meridian Ranch. You all approved it with a vote of 7-1. It was ultimately approved unanimously by the Board of County Commissioners 4-0. But I will tell you, there was a very similar discussion with the board as to what you all had. It was a lot lengthier, I think, than we might have thought, but I think it was a very good conversation to have. And certainly they asked some very pointed questions of the developer about, you know, how many more times are we going to change the uses, how many more times are we going to change the densities. I think those were great questions to ask. The last one was the Nelson Winery, which again was our first ag retainment use. That was a special use. That was something that I had elevated first to you all, and then ultimately went onto the board due to some of the responses from the neighbors. The Board of County Commissioners, it was actually the last item on their agenda. The only folks still in attendance were just staff, so there was nobody in opposition, just like there was nobody in opposition when it was heard by you all. And they approved it as well, unanimously 4-0. Any questions on any of that? That's all I have. We will do our building permit reporting for single family at the next meeting. We do that every other meeting because that's when the numbers come in. So unless you have any other questions for me, I will let you get back to your normal business.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The voting members this morning will be Mr. Curry, Mr. Wood, Ms. Therese, Ms. Dillon, and Ms. Friedman. And with that, we'll begin with the minutes. Yes, Mr. Curry.
And the chair.
Oh, and the chair, yes, I will vote. I skip over me and then I forget what I did. The minutes from the last meeting, has everyone received a copy? Any corrections or changes? Hearing none, those minutes are approved as presented. And with that, we will go to we have a item on the consent calendar, which is VA18-001. Is there any interest in asking any questions about that before we vote on it?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Curry.
I do have some questions, and I can either ask them now or if we could hear this as an abbreviated regular item, either way, whichever makes the most sense, I'd be grateful.
Why don't you start off with your questions, and then if that gets involved or people have a desire to go further, then we can do that.
All right, thank you. One, I note in the staff report that there's one waiver requested to a fencing requirement, but the LOI discusses a waiver to a landscaping requirement also on a different side of the property. Can you talk to that?
I can. Nina Reese, Planning and Community Development. So the Land Development Code allows the director to approve an alternative landscaping plan. It does not allow him to approve a waiver. So in instances where an all-out waiver is required, then they have to seek approval before the Board of County Commissioner for that item. When it is more of an alternative landscaping plan, where they're still providing for whatever screening method may be required, then it would be included with their site development plan instead of as a waiver. So because they're still proposing to have landscaping on site and on all of the property boundaries to some degree, that request hasn't been included in the waiver, but they're not proposing any solid fencing.
Okay. Second question about in a residential neighborhood and talking about the lighting. The application says they'll have lighting, but it's only going to be used during operating hours. Well, normally operating hours in the daytime, you don't need lighting, and at nighttime, they're not going to light the parking lot, or do any of those not going to be any detrimental lighting effects in the at night?
So with the site development plan, they would be required to submit a photometric plan, even if their proposal is that the lighting will be limited to business hours, because what's just like you said, what's the point of having a light if you're not going to actually turn it on? So with that photometric plan, we would ensure that they meet our lighting standards, which means at the property boundary, they can't exceed 0.1 candles if they're adjacent to a roadway or a residential property line, which would be on all sides. And normal business hours in the wintertime could require lights because the sun obviously goes down much earlier and rises later.
Okay, and then the last question is this, and as I try to weigh the benefits to the county of having a commercial application in a residential zone versus other, the economic advantages indicate that the property taxes are going to go higher and that the county will collect more in property taxes. Now, I get that the commercial business will generate more sales tax, but I'm trying to understand the property tax. Does a variance of use, and maybe the attorney is better suited to answer this, I don't know, but does a variance of use for a property actually result in a change to the property taxes, or is it the zoning that's applied to that? So if I have maybe a daycare center in a residential zone, do I get taxed at a commercial rate or a residential rate?
So because I don't work in the assessor's department, I can't specifically answer that question. I can just tell you what I've seen.
I'm going to interrupt rudely for a moment because we have a problem with the audio.
Oh.
And since this is the official record, we need to get it working. But remember where you're at. and then a residential well.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, please.
No problem.
Sir.
How have you been?
I am well. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Good.
All right, so we will remain in recess.
Tracy?
Yes. It's hard
time for lunch.
To inter-
I wish the morning.
I just got a report from Mr. Dossi, and they have patched up the audio system so it will be functional, and so we'll resume.
So I think I'm gonna try to restate Mr. Curry's question. He had some questions about the assessment of a property if it gets a variance. I've had a lot of discussions with both the previous county assessor as well as the current county assessor. The assessment of the property, they do look at the zoning, but more importantly, they look at the use on the property. So for instance, you can have a commercially zoned property that you're running cattle on. It's going to be assessed as ag. It's not going to be assessed as commercial. Obviously, if there's a use on the property that doesn't have a variance, that could go away and affect the assessment because it would be an illegal use. But in this case, once they get the variance, then the use can remain long-term. That will increase the assessment, obviously, because it's based on use, not on zoning.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm satisfied. We don't need to make this
all right.
Item for my benefit. Thank you.
Okay. We have started some discussion on this issue. And does anyone in the audience want to speak about this issue? Hearing none, would the applicant like to come forward since we have had conversation between the commission and staff? Yes, sign in and then that microphone, I believe, will work.
John Hotchkiss, property owner.
All right.
Do you have any questions for me at this time? More?
I'm not hearing any. If you always have an opportunity to rebut anything that's gone on before.
Okay.
So
I didn't hear any objections. Ms. Ria said they were looking to comply with the landscaping requirements generally. And really just the variance for the fencing was just to match the rest of the neighborhood. Putting a solid fence in really would stand out like a sore thumb.
Okay.
And so we're just looking to do that.
So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Is anyone ready to present a motion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Curry.
As regards to agenda item 2B, file number VA-18-001, variance of use for Hotchkiss, I move for approval in accordance with this new standard resolution on page 51 with four conditions and four notations.
Second.
Second from Mr. Reese.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I understand you need to take an action on the waiver. Request.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Would you restate the motion, Mr. Curry?
As regards agenda item 2B, file number VA-18-001, variance of use for Hotchkiss, I move for approval in accordance with the standard resolution on page 51 to include the landscaping waiver as requested and to include the four conditions and four notations.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Then I'll call the roll. Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Ms. Therese?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
Ms. Friedman?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye, and the item is approved unanimously. And with that, we will move to item number 3. And that, I believe,
Mr. Chair, Planning Commission, Gabe Savigny, Planning and Community Development. This is an approval of location application for Cherokee Metropolitan District. This one is going to be located on Palmer Park. You do have two of them, so I want to make sure that we keep those separated. Right now, it's just going to be the one on Palmer Park, U-17-003. The county attorney go over the review criteria.
This is from section 5.3.3.J. It's also pursuant to Colorado Revised Statute 3028.110. This is a location approval. This is where the application for public use. Structure utility is reviewed for conformity with the submittal and processing requirements included within this code and procedures manual and for conformity with the adopted master plan. Now, what happens here, as you probably know, although we have not had and usually do not get many of these, this one is before you today, number one, because it falls out of the 1041 regulations purview because there is an exception there, and that's explained in your backup materials. But also, I want you to understand that because the Planning Commission is not the body that approves the financing and the planning of the proposed structure that's the subject of the location, that means that your decision today can be overruled by the Cherokee Metropolitan District, which is that final authorizing body, and that they have the authority for the financing and the design. Therefore, if you approve with conditions that the Cherokee Metro District does not like, they can essentially take an action to disregard your decision. If you make a decision to deny, they can also take an action to approve. Basically, what is going on here is, as the last clause indicates, the purpose of these location approvals is to make sure that the structure or the public use is in conformance with the master plan. That's really what you're looking at. The hope is, at least is how it's stated in case law, the hope is that if there is a finding that it is not consistent with the master plan, that the Planning Commission finds such, that the utility or the public entity will respect that finding and move away from approval. Now, that doesn't always happen, and it hasn't happened with Cherokee in the past, but that is what is going on with this one and your next one today.
Thank you.
So the owner representative, again, the owner is Cherokee Metropolitan District, and the representative is Forsgren Associates. They are here to give their brief presentation for the project.
Thank you.
My name is Jonathan Moore with Forsgren Associates.
Sure.
I'm going to slide over here so I can see here. What you're looking at is Cherokee Metro District's main office, which is off of Palmer Park, east of Powers. It's about a half mile away, but just give you a reference here to this picture that's being shown. Cherokee Metro District is the second largest utility provider in the county, second only to Colorado Springs Utilities. They have a large staff. That staff needs to report to this particular office. They need to enter their field office, their field personnel need to enter their information, and then they leave, and they go out miles and miles of water line, sewer line. They go out and inspect that every day. They come back at towards the end of the day, and they need a spot to enter that data. And what you see on here is just east of their existing building. You can see where we're proposing.
You can use the cursor if you wish to.
Thank you.
I believe you can.
Yes. Oh, there it is. I didn't see it on here. This building right here has been there for about a year. Cherokee staff has been using that building to enter all of their data, very similar to Colorado Springs Utilities does. They have different facilities. And then they go out. That's pretty much what they've been doing for the last year. Before that, they've been stumbling upon each other inside, trying to find space to get to computers and so forth. And this was approved, this facility was approved as a temporary building roughly about a year ago as well. So it's been working out for them well, and they're here to ask that it become more permanent. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Cherokee is represented here as well, if there's any specific questions for those folks.
I'm not hearing any from the board at this
point
in time.
Thank you.
Gabe Savigny, Planning and Community Development. So what you can see here, here's the zoning map for the area. There is a lot of RS 6000 to the east. It is immediately adjacent to some commercial, community commercial, and then also to some industrial to the west. This vicinity map gives you a little bit better idea. So you do see the Powers Boulevard here, and then there is Palmer Boulevard right here. And you notice this, so they are proposing to this trailer, this mobile office that has been there for the last year as a temporary use that was approved, to make it a permanent structure. They are proposing to add these trees to help with screening purposes for these residential homes to the east to help offset that. They are not taking up any additional parking by this addition. I know in the packet there is the original site development plan from this utility location, and it shows that area as a possible area for expansion. The neighbor notification went out on February 28th. There was seven notifications that went out. I have had zero replies to this particular one. That had any from any of the adjacent neighbors, and again, those are the X's will indicate the lows. These are smaller lots. There should be three there, but hopefully that kind of got across. But all these were notified on that date. Engineering, there were no engineering issues with the site, so we just provided some back the data for it, where the firm panel number that shows that it's located outside the 500-year floodplain. The property is located within the Sand Creek drainage basin. No drainage or bridge fees are assessed with the approval location request. And a drainage letter was submitted, which concluded that there will be no negative impacts on the existing site condition and will not adversely affect the downstream or surrounding developments. And the transportation and traffic impact study was not required, since the proposed permanent use of the existing mobile office is not anticipated to create any additional trips to the site. It's the same number of employees that will be utilizing the site that have been there. Do you have any questions for engineering? We do have a representative here.
I'm not hearing any.
So here's the conditions of approval for this site. The no substantial expansion, enlargement, or modification of the site plan shall be allowed except upon reevaluation and public hearing. The applicant shall seek approval from the Planning and Community Development Department of a site development plan within 90 days of approval, unless otherwise administratively extended by the Planning and Community Development Director. They do have their application submitted. They are pending the approval of this hearing. The proposed use shall comply with all requirements of the El Paso County Land Development Code and all county, state, and federal regulations, except for those portions varied by this action. And the one notation, approval of location requests are not forwarded to the El Paso County Board of County Commissioners for consideration. Any questions for Planning Committee?
Yes, Mr. Curry.
One quick one.
Yes, sir.
This trailer previously had a temporary use approved. Were there any associated conditions with that?
The temporary use on it, they're the only condition on those is for the year, and then any movement of that trailer, they would have to come back in and update their temporary use, but they maintained it for that year, and then they came back in for the EA back in last year and then to pursue the permanent structure.
So aside from the time limit, there weren't any other conditions associated with the approval?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
At this point in time, is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in favor of this action? Is there anyone who would like to speak in opposition? Yes. I guess not, right? Any other items? There's nothing to rebut, so we'll go ahead and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
On agenda item 3, file number U17003, approval of location, Cherokee Metropolitan District. I move approval of the new standard resolution, page 9, with 3 conditions and 1 notation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second from Ms. Dillon. Any discussion? Go through the list. Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Ms. Greese?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
Ms. Friedman?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So this action is approved unanimously. We'll move to the next one, which is item 4.
Hello again, Gabe Savini, Planning and Community Development. This is also an approval of location from Cherokee Metropolitan District. This is U17-004. This one, it will be located on Frank Road. Do you need to go over the criteria approval?
Incorporate by reference the comments that I made for item 3.
So again, the owner is Cherokee Metropolitan District with a representative of Forger & Associates. We can turn this one over to them for their presentation.
Thank you.
Again, Jonathan Moore of Forger & Associates. Again, looking at Cherokee's system. Their system runs all over this county. It has well fields up on the north, up near Douglas County. It has well fields out east. This particular site is where they bring water from north down to south, down to their building. The reason why we're proposing a office in this location is that Cherokee has staff that works in the northern part of the county. And to get them out of the snow and out of the wind and out of the rain, there needs to be a location. And there was a home on this site. When this tank was built, there was a home, and they were using that home to enter their data, to make sure that their system's running right. They have a 24-inch line that's running, again, from Hodgin Roadway all the way down into basically to their Tamman line, which is close to the central of Colorado Springs. They need people out there. They need to watch this line. This service is, again, Cherokee services about 23,000 people, and this line is critical to that infrastructure. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Mr. Curry.
Thank you. Just one. Aesthetically, it seems like siting that trailer vertically almost just rotate it 90 degrees and drop it down a little bit toward the corner of the, a little bit just straight south there, and rotating it vertically would be, would have less aesthetic impact on the area. Is there a reason why you didn't choose to site it there?
That's a great question, and we debated a lot of different locations because we were sensitive where there's homes around this, and that's why the tank was buried. Here, this tank is buried in the ground with a berm that runs all the way around it. Well, not all the way around, excuse me, just on this side. You got good vegetation on the south side. The owner is open to moving it around. That's not an issue. We were trying to guess the best spot, and we wanted to see how maintenance around that tank would work. Yes, it is going to have some sort of foundation to it, but it is movable. If they figured out that, hey, this doesn't work, let's move it to a different location, that's totally fine. And if they wanted to start in a different location, I think that would be fine too, and they're open to that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be sensitive to the aesthetics here.
Exactly.
You know, if it's hidden by the berm and it's not obvious from this picture is what I'm
trying
to gauge.
And it's hard to see, but you see this berm that runs all the way around here again, and it was close to this other little shed.
Is that berm higher than that trailer will be?
No. In that location, there probably wouldn't be.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would you like to come forward and finish your presentation? I apologize.
So this is the zoning map for the area. There is mostly residential. There is a PUD that's further south, further east. You do have some RR 2.5 directly west, and a majority around this site is RR5. This is the vicinity map that gives you a little bit general idea. You have Shoup Road here, and then Black Forest Road out to the west right here. And this is their proposal. It is for just one unit at this site for the use of just the employees to be able to utilize it on a temp type basis during the day. It's not a permanent type of use. There is no public utilities as far as bathrooms that are proposed on the site. So again, the engineering, there weren't, based on the proposal of just that unit, there wasn't any engineering issues. The FEMA flood rate map showed that it was outside the 500-year floodplain, and the property here is located in the West Kiowa Creek drainage basin. Again, no drainage or bridge fees are assessed with approval location, and no negative impacts downstream or surrounding developments is anticipated. Then the transportation impact study was not required since the proposed permanent use of the existing mobile office is not anticipated to create any additional trips to the site. Again, the same number of employees will be accessing the site as before. It's just going to be a place they can get out of the elements for their work-related issues. So this was sent to eight neighbors. We're notified again on February 28th of 2018. We do have one letter on the file that you guys did receive in your packet today that was against. I have received two phone calls that were in opposition as well. And then we have one that came in that was in favor and one in no opinion. But again, that's in your packet. One of the issues that were brought up with it, the county attorney did address those, is the difference between the why it didn't qualify for a 1041 versus the approval of location. And that front page with the star asterisk by it is the exemptions list that helped address the issue of why the staff went with the approval of location. And that is the day-to-day operations of an existing project or facility, or a minor change in the operation of an existing project or facility, including retrofitting or updating technology, so long as the change in operation does not constitute a material change and does not cause negative impacts different from that of an existing facility or project, or otherwise exacerbate existing impacts. The determination of a minor change, material change, and negative or exacerbating impact shall be made by the Development Services Department Director. So that is why this application was felt that it was a minor change to the site. There's no huge change to it. And that's why it went forward as an approval location for that structure. But there are additional conditions of approval that are different, slightly different than the previous one. No substantial expansion, enlargement, or modification of the approval of location as depicted on the approval of location site plan shall be allowed except upon reevaluation and public hearing as specified in the El Paso County Land Development Code. The applicant shall seek approval from the Planning and Community Development Department of a site development plan within 90 days of approval. Again, that one's also been submitted and awaiting the outcome of this hearing. The proposed use shall comply with all requirements of the El Paso County Land Development Code and all county, state, and federal regulations, except for those portions varied by this action. The hours of operation during the construction and long-term operation of the office space shall be limited to seasonal daytime hours. During emergency situations, including risk to public health and safety, work may proceed followed by notification to the PCD director, Planning Community Development Director, within 24 hours following initiation of such emergency conditions. Any signage must be approved by the El Paso County Planning and Community Development Department in accordance with Chapter 6 of the El Paso County Land Development Code. Site lighting, including temporary lighting, will be limited to that shown on the site development plans. Detailed specifications shall be provided. All light fixtures shall be directional and positioned so that the light sources are concealed and fully shielded from adjacent properties and roads. Operations shall comply with the county noise ordinance. If complaints occur, the county may require that the developer to conduct additional testing to determine noise levels associated with operation or vehicle traffic noise levels. The county may require changes to haul routes and hours of operation or noise controls may need to be installed to achieve acceptable levels as defined in the county noise ordinance. The applicant shall consult with Colorado Parks and Wildlife regarding need for wildlife surveys and provide copies of any required surveys and mitigation plans to the planning and community development department. The applicant shall provide copies of state and county air quality permits prior to approval of each site development plan application. Finally, the applicant shall comply with all applicable local, state, and federal laws and regulations regarding the use, disposal, storage, and transportation of solid and or hazard materials and on and off site. One notation, approval location requests are not forwarded again to the El Paso County Board of County Commissioners for consideration. Questions on this application?
I have one question.
Yes, sir.
You have a site development plan, is that correct?
We have the application.
And that site development plan shows a orientation of the trailer, the mobile structure. So if they decide to reorient it or that kind of thing, they would need to amend the site development plan. Is that correct?
That is correct. They would submit a new site plan for that one.
And at the option of the director, that could be done administratively?
For the site development plan, if you make the motion here to add that, the site development plans are done administratively, so we would send the comment back to the applicant and request an updated site development plan with what condition you guys place on it for the layout of it, and they would have to resubmit.
Okay. If we do not, I'm not sure what our conditions are, but do we have any that level of detail in the conditions that exist now?
On that level of condition, if it's on there, then you don't have to be specific on it. They'll resubmit, and it'll be subject to the condition that you guys place on it. We wouldn't be able to approve that site development plan without meeting the condition you guys place here.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in favor of this action? Is there anyone here who would like to speak in opposition? Yes. Self-select who comes first, and when you come up to the podium and that microphone and state your name and put your name on the list. So that, the list is on the other podium, so you need to start there, and then you can... You're free to roam around to whichever microphone you want to use.
My name is Joan Varon. I live directly across from the tank. I am definitely an adjacent neighbor. I'm not sure how many people I'm speaking for here, because due to the fact that we all live on basically 5 acres, we all have lives and we don't get to see each other very often. However, I have been speaking to council, and we know that we do have rights, and we feel that we have not had time to explore our rights. And I was advised, and I think it's a great suggestion, that I ask the planning board for a postponement of this set date certain in the future so that we have time to explore our rights as a semi-community. I would like to speak later again, but that's my comment for the moment.
You will only have one chance to speak, so...
If I have only one chance to speak, then let me continue.
Certainly. Please do.
First of all, I've been out there since 1988, and I know the structure that they removed and tore down, which, if they had to have something, would have been perfect. It was a great little cottage in Black Forest, built, hand-built by the person who now the Frank Road is named for, Frank Walker, Irma Walker owned the property. I thought it was a bit heartless. They tore it down right before the fire, before anybody could do anything, but it's gone. Fast forward to 2013. Let me talk about 2013. Most of us that are in here today were here in 2013 when this whole area, this proposal for the tank went in. At that time, assurances were given excuse me, to the planning board and to the people in the audience that this would remain what I would call a quiet site. That is, there wouldn't be vehicles in and out. There wouldn't be an office, excuse me, or any of what they're asking for today. And I wish I'd had time, again, to get back and get those minutes so that you could see them and I could have someone present that here to you. So now there's been a complete change of their intentions. And in looking up what they said, what they called this, it is going to be on the project details, a site development plan for a mobile office on site for a headquarters. Catch that word, headquarters. That always means something. It's a place people gather for the general area. All of a sudden, this relatively quiet site, and I know because I've been looking at it, and it has been relatively quiet. I mean, let's not add tremendous insult to injury by making this become something that could eventually become a slippery slope and go to the parade of horrors here. I mean, who knows? We start with a mobile home, bad enough. They want to call it permanent, mobile. I don't know. Those two things don't match. We start with something like that. The next thing you know, it's not big enough. We're going to have a bigger building. We'll be in here possibly fighting with them later about something that is completely commercial. The whole episode, the whole thing is commercial, whether people want to believe it or not. Sitting out here in the middle of beautiful homes, which are being rapidly devalued by a mobile home, a double wide on that property. I mean, we're talking $700,000 homes out there that are going to take a huge hit if this kind of thing is going to be allowed. I don't care how you orient that. It's ugly. That's the end of my comments. I am definitely not in favor of this.
Thank you. Let's make... We don't really have applause or whatever, but there were several other hands that went up as to, wanted to speak to this issue. Please come forward.
My name's Alan Peterson. I'm a resident on Frank Road since 1994.
Yes, you certainly can.
Would help. There is a residence here. I think she either owns this one or this one that just spoke.
You'll have to use the cursor.
You do.
Because it doesn't like your finger.
So residents on this parcel and this parcel, which do have unobstructed, predominantly unobstructed views of whatever is placed here as a temporary structure. Does this show on the overhead when I put it there?
Did you wish to have an overhead?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if...
Yes, just put it there, and
there it
you can look up at the screen, and you can see how it's aligned.
Okay, perfect.
You can move it around and do whatever you want to.
I guess before I read this section, I'm going to show some photos I took of this location. This is a tree that currently is a pinon. It sits here. This is the adjoining property owner's residence right here. This is taken from Frank Road, which runs right to the side of this water tower. This is the fenced area that exists on the parcel. And they have a second opening right here, which is actually accessible from Swan Road. Again, another opening on this parcel. You can see this fence, which is wired perimeter, is 6 feet high. This current structure on the location, which is their utility shed, I would guess is approximately 10 foot in height, but you're looking down slope, so it actually sits below the grade of these wires of the perimeter fencing. You can see no berm here that would obstruct the view from Swan Road. The berm ends about midway on this water tank, and I don't think they ever designed the berm to encompass having a structure that would be placed in this location according to the diagram. So there is no additional plantings, landscape screening plantings that have been done the entire length of the backside except for this one existing pinon here. This is a view from the intersection of New Discovery, which would be approximately right to the north of this pole. Swan Road runs here. This view, as you can see, would be the placement site of this temporary structure, this being their existing shed. Again, the fence here about 6 feet high, so the modular, if it went in, would be approximately the same roof line shown on this utility shed. This is a little further back showing Swan Road. Again, here's the existing utility shed. The berm that grades out, actually, here's the fence line and the roof line of this shed. And just to, for another comparison, this is an active beetle tree on the adjoining property to the water tower. This is the roof line. They had been notified of this active beetle tree on the property, but it has not been removed, nor any feedback from Cherokee Metropolitan Water District. This is the plat map we've previously seen. The applicant states that there are screening trees, deciduous trees. There is one aspen that is dead right here. The original planting of aspens was done here. There are no other deciduous trees on this property. There was a variety of perimeter pinons, and I think they were Douglas firs put in here, and after several of those trees have died and not been replaced, there currently exists a pretty unobstructed view, even of what was to be a shielded water tower view at one time. This is the current access off of Frank Road. Here's Frank, here's Swan. This kind of undefined space in here actually has provided some access to the secondary gate opening, which I think is right here. So it could actually be created that this circular pad around this drainage tank or drainage pond, retention pond, can actually function as a driveway to, actually it's the gates right here. So there's a gate here and a gate over here. The applicant states are going to use this as the location access, but conceivably they have all the infrastructure for a second access to come in off of Swan as well. The original residence of Emma Walker was right here before it burnt in the Black Forest fire. I don't believe it was ever used as an office. It actually was housing for Cherokee Metropolitan Water District employees constructing a variety of things, I think, within their area. Before the Black Forest fire destroyed the original residence structure at this location address, the applicant address was 8655 Swan Road. The applicant's land was originally operated under part of the Edgar Lumber and Box Company, which was owned by General Palmer. And this was found on the original El Paso County land grantee indexes. Frank Road itself, under which my residence is on, had 10 residences before the Black Forest fire, and only 4 residents remained post-fire. It was after the fire that Cherokee began developing the water tank. Applicant applied for remuneration to the 13410 Frank Road from 8655 Swan Road. The tax record currently shows both addresses on the county tax assessment page. The applicant already has 2 structures on this property, the 1412 and 13420, with the water tank and the utility building have their own separate addresses. The existing 1 million gallon water tank on this parcel delivers water traveling 12 miles downhill away from Black Forest to the city of Colorado Springs. The second future 1 million gallon water tank was already approved for this site for this Frank Road location. And just for some reference, this parcel map, I think that second water tower would sit someday approximately there. Applicant intends to permanently place, applicant labels this location as a site development plan for a mobile office for a headquarters for the general area, spoken to briefly. The word headquarters is somewhat of a concern if there's already a headquarters back in the city itself for the Cherokee District. Applicant intends to permanently place a temporary, kind of a misnomer, temporary modular structure sized for up to 8 occupants. The modular structure is 60 feet by 12 feet, offering 3 separate office spaces within. The applicant's proposed modular is the largest and longest made by the Canadian company Britco. No mention of the pending purchase of the new site headquarters office is found in the Cherokee Channel newspaper, which is the official newspaper to report decisions made by the Cherokee Metropolitan Water District board members. The applicant proposes to deliver the 60-foot length modular structure on a mobile 6-wheel chalice. It is not disclosed by applicant if they intend to remove the delivery wheels or false skirt and conceal the chalice or any unpermitted foundation put under the modular or even tie downs for the structure with hurricane straps. Certainly recommended. Applicant states that no soil will be disturbed in the placement of the modular structure, as disturbing soil would indicate the creation of a foundation and require El Paso County Regional Planning Plan review. It is not possible to place a 60-foot length modular trailer on an existing slope site without doing soil disturbance, adding post footings or concrete piers to achieve leveling. No designated parking space for the new structure is defined by the applicant. An existing second gated access, as I mentioned, exists on the site with the second access gate oriented to or from Swan Road. And it is not disclosed by the applicant any plans to connect water, sewer, and gas from the utility service lines left after the original personal residence was demolished in the fire, or after the fire, but the applicant has obtained service commitments from all utility providers in the area. So the question is, does the applicant intend to not have sewer facilities or restroom facilities, and yet you'd have potentially three offices and not have a sewer connection? Same with gas. Let's see, applicant has not provided any proof of having obtained an insurance binder, which would show any liability limits and effective dates of coverage necessary for this intended temporary placement of a permanent modular structure. The low height berm, dirt berm, on applicant's property is inadequate to conceal a 60-foot length modular as claimed in the application. Dirt berm is not sized to conceal entire height for the distance as well from either Swan or Frank Road views. No berm exists on the backside or the south edge, which was the photo shown that went past the view, went past the water tower to the residents across the street. No berm on south edge makes the entire prefab modular structure visible from all the south residential parcels, which would include the roads that enter into New Discovery development there. and I'm almost done here, so bear with me. The partial berm on the north side edge is too short in height and short in length to conceal the modular structure. The existing berm was not constructed to obscure a trailer, but for the water tower. Not a single living deciduous tree remains alive to conceal the planned east-west access view, as shown in the applicant diagram and photos, and a small cluster of planted pinyons and ponderosas exist on the northeast corner, but will offer little or no screening, even mature, because the water tower already blocks that view that the trees would have shielded had there been no water tower. Applicant was contacted by phone previously to discuss ongoing loss of a majority of original deciduous and non-live, non-native conifer plantings. They actually planted trees that are not native to that 7,000 foot elevation that this water tower sits at. So they may choose a different landscape company with a better choice of plant species, and requested they remove these dead landscape trees on site. Applicant was asked to replant any landscape trees lost from lack of maintenance or watering. This is basically notification. Additionally, the applicant was advised 2 months ago of a large ponderosa pine tree needing removal as it exhibits active pine beetle infestation, and that tree is, as of today, has not been removed. Now, there is some question as I stood at that property line whether that tree is bisected by the actual property line boundary. So it could be the adjoining property owner and the Cherokee Water District's responsibility for that tree. You know, I don't have the ability to cite with the transit down the line to know for sure, but it does sit right apparently on the visible boundary between the two property owners, and of great concern that it's still standing. And then additionally, the applicant or the online application proposal shows a submitted in favor response letter, but the return address is the same for both water tower proposal, or sorry, both trailer proposals that are received from Cherokee Water District with two different addresses, but certainly paying attention to the smallest detail has the biggest effect here as to who actually is for this proposed temporary structure. And here is one submission of the actual trailer floor plan. This shows two separate, this is as configured by the factory of Britco, two separate entry points, and then you can actually see divided office, larger office, and office space within. And this shows, you know, some of the characteristics that can be ordered. Again, I'm not knowledgeable to how they intend to have this built or if it's already built, and then whether they would have electric baseboard heating, whether they would have gas heating installed, or whether they would have no heat in an office. So those are issues I do not see in the applicant's proposal and would seek to get clarity on.
Before you finish, Mr. Yes. Peterson, I'm going to ask you to stay where you're at for just couple minutes. And a question for staff and council. Is there a site plan for this that has any additional berming or vegetation or anything else to obscure the appearance of this new office?
Gabe Savigny, Planning and Community Development. Right now, the site plan is based off of the old one that they just did the minor modification with the addition to it. So if it is approved, then that berm would have to be there depending on what they're going to propose after this one. But nothing has been approved on that site plan as of right now. We're still waiting for the outcome of this meeting to see if that's even approved or if it has to be relocated. And then if this right here becomes part of it, then they can meet with, they'll have to meet with the inspectors and go through that process for any of that. But they have proposed in their letter of intent that they're not proposing any dirt work at this time. That's why the engineering didn't have much of the reports to do.
The reason I ask that question is this is a location issue, and is it is attorney has mentioned, we can put conditions on it and then approve it with conditions, or we can deny it. In either case, it goes to the water district to decide what they really want to do. It strikes me that if the water district and the neighbors could agree on a site improvements, and we put it in as a condition, that the water district may be more inclined to accept that. That's why I asked council to weigh in on that.
Cole Lemon, Senior Assistant County Attorney. Yes, you have the ability to impose additional conditions. They need to be reasonable. You certainly can have a discussion with the applicant in the form of questions, dialogue, or whatever, to see if they would be amenable to some berming or landscaping buffering.
Would the applicant be interested in entering into a discussion with some of the neighbors here? We could take a brief break.
Can I briefly address one of the issues that I know that two of the neighbors have brought up about the headquarters issue? So that is not something, if you look at their letter of intent that the applicant has done, that is the description that I placed on the side because they were two of the similar ones. And so to make sure that I didn't get it mixed up with the different ones. So that's just a description that the county had placed on it. That wasn't on the letter of intent. Their actual letter of intent is to gain approval for placement of a one-story mobile office for staff to use within a property owned by Cherokee Metro District. So that'll be right there on their request and justification. I just wanted to clear that up where that is coming from. On our online submittal program, there is a descriptor on it, and that's what I used to describe it. So it's in the office of El Paso County, not the application from the applicant.
The applicant, would there be any merit in taking a break and having you chat with your neighbors up there and see if you could rough out a quick sketch of any changes?
Jonathan Smith, I'm the Water and Wastewater Collections Manager for the Cherokee Metropolitan District, and thank you all for hearing us this morning. We are absolutely and have always been in favor of working with our neighbors, as the groundwater storage tank was proposed to be 37 feet in the air. We buried it 20 feet in the air to reduce the visibility of the tank. We even allowed the neighbors that we worked with to pick the color of the tank to try to blend in, as well as the berm that you see above it. So working with our neighbors is what we do, so we would like the opportunity.
Jonathan Moore, Forsman Associates. As a lot of these go, I don't think we can resolve it in 10 minutes. What I would propose is a condition of approval that over the next 30 days, we have these folks come down to Cherokee's office, we have a big set of plans out, and we can start working some things out. Because one person might want the berm and another person might want trees. And so it's better to get them all in the same room and talking and kind of list the priorities.
Okay, is there a way we can make that a condition?
Well, you're going to have to decide whether you want to impose a requirement for appropriate screening in the form of a berm or landscaping to have any teeth to it. Mm-hmm. If you just leave it up to the district and the neighbors to get together and work things out, then neither the district has protection nor the neighbors have an ability to see that it gets done. So if you want to do something proactive along those lines, then you're going to have to craft a condition to address that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Dillon.
Or you're going to have to continue it.
That's what I was going to suggest. This sounds more and more like it needs to be continued, that there needs to be more discussion and come back with a new plan rather than us trying to manipulate this plan to work. I think we need more discussion and continue this.
Mr. Chair, if there's a motion to continue, then that motion has to be very specific as to what you want the applicants to address in the interim and to come back with.
Okay. What I'd like to do is to
I would suggest that you continue taking testimony on this. You have neighbors that have come today, and I think you should go ahead and give them the opportunity to speak. I think the applicant should have an opportunity then to close up discussion rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you. I've asked Mr. Peterson to remain there. Is there anything else you would like to say?
Oh, I guess given some of the...
Because I'm only going to let you have one chance.
Sure. Well, I think, yes, Cherokee has done some things that are of benefit given the circumstance of what has to, I guess, has to occur there. Certainly the placement of the water tower below grade has helped the aesthetics. It actually is the tallest structure, as you would stand, if you could stand on its roof, would be the tallest structure between that point on the north-south axis all the way to New York City, to give you some indication of what this really is in relative to the landscape of the area. I might be amenable to things that would shield whatever would be placed there, or a reduction in size of the structure. I might be amenable to a permanent structure that would be more conducive to the area, like a kit log cabin. Can't see why that wouldn't be feasible financially and for the long-term purpose the applicant is proposing at this site, given that there'll be a second water tower, second water line, which would require maintenance. I don't have their time horizon for when this additional infrastructure of another water line is anticipated, but seemingly a temporary structure doesn't fit what appears to be a long-term commitment to this location and the need for staffing and use of this facility to log data or whatever is occurring there. So those are some of the things that I guess I would add to the mix as we go forth.
Any questions for Mr. Peterson? Thank you, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Wood.
Okay. Speak into the mic, please.
I might not have absorbed everything you said, but you mentioned that, did you say something about a person who was for it, a neighbor, that had the wrong address,
So maybe the applicant can show a copy of the received letter and the return address of the, so there's, today, of course, we have two Cherokee Metropolitan Water District's requests, mm-hmm. the previous one to this. The letter, as I saw it, listed for Frank Road, is using the same individual that's on the Palmer Lake or Palmer Road approval. So I'm not sure how somebody who lives down on Palmer Lake or Palmer Road can submit a letter of for, even though they don't live in any proximity to this particular.
Okay, and so is this the same as the one we have in our packet, Diana Taylor, that we're talking about?
No, I think it's...
Because we have one that says, just make it look nice, not old, ugly, junky, new preferred landscape, et cetera.
No, I think I saw it with the list of the 6250 Palmer.
Okay, so then we have a different one. That was my confusion.
I don't have an ability to pull up the planning file.
Yeah.
But if I could, I'd make be able to show that piece. And I don't see a copy of that in my printed documents, but...
No, that's fine, sir. I was just trying to get my letters.
Sure.
No. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Peterson? Thank you very much, sir.
Yes.
Mr. Peterson, would you please submit your exhibits to the secretary, please?
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak in opposition? Please come forward, state your name, and sign in.
Thank you, folks, so much for hearing us. I really appreciate that. My name is Kerry Abernathy. I own the residence, me and my wife, and our four dogs, six kids, 12 grandkids, not all at once. Mm-hmm. We own a residence right next door to the tank. We're at Walker Estates, lot number 13. Cherokee Water District is Walker Estates, lot number 14, just to make that clear. So we are right next door. I'm going to move over here. I'm not here to represent the residents of Black Forest, even though I am a resident of Black Forest. I'm not even here to represent the residents of the Walker Estates area, the 14 lots that are there. I'm here representing the neighbor of Cherokee Water District. And all I'm asking is that they be a good neighbor. That's all I'm asking. In 2012, there was a discussion of a water tank and possibly a 2-foot water line to come into the area. And lo and behold, the tank would land in our area. And it got real nasty during that time. Some of the meetings that came out of that, I wasn't real proud of the way some of the people in Black Forest handled it, but you're messing with our livelihood. That's where we live at. And to tell us that a tank's going to be placed in there in a 2-foot water line, it really wasn't handled real well. And it got messy, and we got momentum, and they worked together with us. Cherokee did a great job. There was a gentleman who was an engineer on it, Al Watson. Al Watson and I continue to be friends today and do business together. I'm 38 years in construction, and we're just good friends. In the midst of all that conversation in 2012, 2013, especially in 2013, we as the residents of Black Forest and as the area, we said, why can't we do something with that tank to make it more aesthetically pleasing, something that would work so we can work together on it? Because it's coming. I mean, it got so messy as some of the representatives who are not members of Cherokee Water District were claiming eminent domain with some of the residents and saying, we're coming in, you can either sell it to us or we'll make you sell it to the land that was part of the pipeline and everything else. The property that was purchased is Emma Walker, who was the original writer of the covenant. And if she knew this was going on today, I think she'd turn over in her grave. Just to let you know that this is document here is the covenants for the property and the 14 lots, which lot 14 and lot 1, which was the original residences for the Walkers, they are not applicable to these covenants that are part of the Walker Estates. But I digress. 2013 came, we've got momentum, we're fighting the tank, we feel they're hearing us. I went to Al with another gentleman, his engineer friend of mine, I said, why can't we just sink that tank and take the overburden and make berms around it? And Sean, who was the general manager of Cherokee at that time, and Al both said, no, we can't do that. It costs way too much money. So we went through the process in June of 2013, Black Forest Fire took place. We immediately lost our momentum. We took from being concerned about a water tank to concerned our houses going to burn down. And as Alan mentioned earlier, we had four houses that were left of the 10 on the 14 lots. So we lost six residences on that. We lost all interest in what was going on with the tank. And at the same time, while the fire was taking place, and my wife and I and our children were evacuating, they're over there cutting down trees, getting ready for the tank. So we had really no ability to push through to slow the tank down and say, just hear us out. And I really believe that was the biggest trouble with the Black Forest community, if we just didn't feel like we were being heard. And it is a concern here now. To Cherokee's, to pat these guys on the back, they did end up burying the tank in the ground 20 foot. Got 17-foot reveals on it, and they did take the berm and put it around the tank. And as the neighbor right next to that thing, my grandkids have christened that the big pickle tank, is what they call that. So it really does look as decent as a tank can be. So credit to you guys for doing what's right and being good neighbors. I appreciate that. So in the middle of all of this, they even asked us what color to paint the tank. We gave them the color, and it apparently was pickle green, is according to my grandkids. So here we are. We're at 2018, and we hear rumor and see the notice of a mobile office going in. Now, being in construction all of my life, in commercial construction, plenty of residences and everything else. If you look around in that area, there is not one mobile office or a pre-manufactured home in that area. These are all foundational homes. These are all well-built homes. And as one of the residents addressed, they're $500,000 plus homes. So to take that and take that type of building, a modular mobile trailer, to me, that's my biggest concern. Does that make sense? As a resident there, I really want it to be aesthetically pleasing and to be part of our community because they're our neighbors. They have a 2 million gallon tank sitting in our front yard, you know, and we want them to be good neighbors. So in the middle of all of this, like I said, the covenant state that one of the things for lots 2 through 13 is that we can't put any mobile trailers without permanent foundations. Now, the foundation they're talking about is just concrete pads built on a tripod that holds a trailer. It's typical mobile trailer foundations. I've lived in those places for years in doing construction. And if you skirt them and you paint them up, you make them look good, it's like putting lipstick on a pig. It sure makes it look a lot better, but still a pig. And in the middle of all of that, that's where we're at. We got a pig moving in, and I have nothing against pigs, but we got a pig moving in where it's, you know, thoroughbred horse type places. It's beautiful out there. And we just want them, I want them to be good neighbors. Now, I'm not talking about all my neighbors here. Alan, why didn't you tell me I got a beetle kill tree next door? So in the middle of all of this, I'm asking for, if we had to live with it, which I think we're going to have to because we're not incorporated, we're El Paso County, and you guys represent us. So if we had to live with it, I would rather not see a trailer there at all, but if we got to live with it, I would love to see a permanent foundation facility put in place, architecturally designed, aesthetically pleasing, which would match the decor of our neighborhood. And you guys are doing that right now. Your proposal before this was to get rid of a mobile office and put in the permanent foundation. I'm saving you a step. I'm saving you money. So if they'll put in a permanent foundation with an aesthetically pleasing place, man, I think it'd be great. Let it fit into the neighborhood. There's three principles I live my company by and I live my life by. And I love these three principles. And whether I go to church, whether I'm in community, whether I'm in school, whether I'm doing business, is number one, I protect my brand. This is who I am. This is what I'm about. And I'm asking my neighbor, are you protecting your brand? Is this what Cherokee's about? Second thing I ask is I always ask people, I never ask people to do things that I wouldn't do morally, ethically, or physically, whether it be in business or as a person. And here's a real simple question for Cherokee. Would you want a mobile place put next door to your residence? That's my question. And lastly, always do what's right. For the neighborhood of Black Forest, for the residents of the Walker Estate area, for my place, just be good neighbors. That's all I'm asking. And join us in that area up there in conducting business and making sure that our that area stays sacred because that's where I raised my kids, that's where I live, it's where my grandkids are going to be. And I want them to look at that tank and just say, I like the big green pickle tank up there, Daddy. You know? Does it make sense? Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah. I have a question. Are you currently in an HOA that has those covenants? Is that?
This is the covenant, and this was written by Irma Walker.
Right.
The covenants, and it was part of our title and our deed to our president. All of us have it for the Walker Estates.
Okay.
And this, and it specifically states, Irma Walker signed this in 1972 and said that lots 14 and lots 1, Jim's not here, but lots 14 is where Cherokee is. They said they are not susceptible to these covenants. They were covering their business, what they're doing. But I think if they saw a big tank there, I think they'd turn over in their grave, you know, and everything else. So these are current covenants. And my challenge to us as the Walker Estates residents, we got to rewrite this. And we got to make sure that, because Cherokee Valley is part of that.
So what you're asking for Cherokee is mm-hmm. basically to be in line, and that's why you mentioned the foundation, is mm-hmm. that would then be in line with the current covenants for that piece of property.
I think that would be acceptable, but also there are no modular buildings in any of that area anymore. There was one down at the bottom on the very south end, and it burnt to the ground. We lost a lot of residents up there, and we lost some dear neighbors. Now we're getting some really great neighbors in there. Had a couple of new homes built, and it's just a fantastic neighborhood. And we want to protect that, because the Black Forest area is a beautiful area. I know you guys have been up there. And we love being there, even with our big green pickle tank up there.
Thank you, Mr. Abernathy.
Yes, sir. My pleasure. Do you guys like this document?
Is there, we don't get involved in the associations or covenants.
Dang it.
Sorry about that. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition?
Yes, if you'd submit that to the secretary, please.
But we do take a copy of it.
First thing, I have three more of the letters that were sent to us that voted no. I don't know who I should give them to.
Give them to the clerk.
I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I'm going to ask you people.
And your name, sir, is?
John Adams. I'm sorry. John Adams.
Adams. Okay.
I live, I guess, what we used to call Catty Corner. From the water tank. I live on the corner of Swan and Vollmer.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you people to vote your conscience. This entity should have never been put in there. You people voted against this, at least this board voted against this in the original thing.
Yes, we did.
So now we're stuck with it. But I want you people to vote like this was your property. When they put this in there, they promised us it was just going to be a pumping station. There wouldn't be any permanent employees there. There wouldn't be any machinery there. And we wouldn't even notice that they were there. And now they're changing the use of it, and then now they want to put an office in there. I am totally against it. I wish we could get everything out of there, but I ask you not to vote to put a trailer, especially a temporary trailer, in that location.
Any questions for Mr. Adams? Thank you, sir. Anybody else who'd like to speak in opposition? Yes, please come forward.
My name is Elaine Peterson, and I have lived on Frank Road for 24 years, since 1994. I just wrote some notes down. The tank, when Cherokee Water District came to us initially, before the fire in 2013, it really put a sour taste in mine and my husband Alan's mouth, as well as other residents. I'm just here to represent ourselves as well. And, you know, it was, the tank itself was, someone came to the house and they said, do you want to give up 3.5 acres of your lot so that we can put a tank on it? Well, you can imagine. We were not really pleased about that. So, yes, Ms. Walker's house burned down, and
excuse me, could you speak a little more into the microphone?
Oh, sure.
Because some of the audience is having trouble hearing you.
Trees were being cut down, as Carrie described, during that fire. Let's see, what else did I put down here? Concerns would be, obviously, the building. It's not aesthetically pleasing to the neighborhood. As Carrie said, there are no trailers or anything like that out there. And if there has to be a permanent structure out there, we would like it to be aesthetically pleasing. I do have a question. I'd like the applicant to advise me if you already have an office on the north end or in the Black Forest area. That would be a question that we have. Safety concerns are traffic. It is a small corner. It's a small cul-de-sac that we live on. New Discovery is the adjacent properties. It's a small area concerned about the traffic and having 8 or 10 more cars on the cul-de-sac. Let's see. My other question for me, and it was already answered. The question is, why can't everybody work out of the home office or the headquarters on Palmer Park? The question was answered. They need a safe and warm, dry place to stay. I don't think that's a good enough reason to put a 60-by-12-foot trailer out there. That's all I have, actually.
Any questions for Ms. Peterson? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to speak in opposition? Hearing none, what I'm going to do is call a 15-minute recess. When we come back, there's one of three things that we can do. We can vote for approval, and with approval, we can attach conditions. Or we can vote for denial. If we vote for denial, there will be no conditions attached. Or we can vote to have a continuance. If we have a continuance, we have to have a specific statement as to what we're continuing to do. So when we come back in 15 minutes, I'm going to expect you people to tell me which of the three options you want to pursue. Thank you very much. We'll be back in 15 minutes. By my watch, we've exhausted our 15 minutes, and so it... Is everybody in order? Okay. We've exhausted our 15 minutes, so I'm going to bring the applicant back up. Everyone who had opposition has had an opportunity to speak. So the question I have for the applicant is, would you like us to go ahead to make a decision in terms whether to approve it or not, and if so, with a condition, or would you prefer to go with a continuance?
Jonathan Moore, Forsgren Associates. We'd like a continuance.
Okay. Can you give us the specific language for the continuance?
We'd like an opportunity to work with the surrounding neighbors on screening ideas and the placement of a possible temporary office.
And how long should we be before we hear the come back out of continuance?
We'd like to come back in 4 weeks.
In four weeks. Okay, we'll have a meeting.
I didn't look at the specific date when you guys meet.
Yeah, we'll need a specific date. Let's check with the secretary and see what the availability
okay.
is.
Okay.
17.
Yes, Ms. Dillon.
Are they only considering a temporary?
Well, they can come back with whatever they choose.
Well, he was putting.
That's what the application is for.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it needs to be amended.
That could be a possibility as well.
And Mr. Chair, while you're looking up the date there, if I may, I had the same question. I would be grateful if you would, in your considerations, include talks about whether or not a different kind of a structure that would be more aesthetically, you know, something other than a trailer. If you would include that in your discussions, I would personally be grateful.
Yes, we will. We will have that part of our discussions with the neighbors, with some of their ideas.
Because I think most of this is, you know, aesthetics, and that's the reason I said if you could explore a wide range of options. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The date would be a continuance until April 17th, is that correct? And is there any specifics that we want to attach to the continuance?
All right. No.
Then we will continue this item on April 17th.
I want a motion on that, please.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Ms. Dillon.
I move that, what's our item number? I don't have that. Okay, where is it? U-17-004, approval of a location, Cherokee Metropolitan District, according to the new standard resolution. What? No, it would not be according to any new standard
it's
resolution.
It's just a motion to continue.
Just a motion to continue this until April 17th.
Is there a second? Ms. Friedman, put your microphone on. And
second.
Thank you very much. So we have a motion on the floor to continue item 4, U17-004, to a date certain of April 17th. And we'll take the roll for the vote. We have a motion and a second. So Mr. Curry.
Aye.
Mr. Wood.
Aye.
Ms. Therese.
No.
Ms. Dillon.
Aye.
Ms. Friedman. And the chair votes aye, so that motion is approved of 5-1. 5 in favor and 1 opposed. And with that, we'll move to item number 5. Excuse me. Before we do that, would you like to go on the record for your opposition, Ms. Therese?
I think that there seems to be some concerns, to me at least, of hard feelings with Cherokee over a tank issue, and that's not what we're here to discuss. I believe that there was adequate time given to all parties to look at this issue before it came to us today. We've heard the opposition. We've heard, we really didn't hear a rebuttal since the Metro District went ahead with the continuance. My feeling is that there was enough information here today to make a viable decision on this issue. And that's why I voted against the continuance.
Thank you. We'll move on to item 5, which is P17-004, rezone for Settlers View. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you. Good morning. Carrie Parsons with Planning and Community Development Chair. Staff would request that we hear items P17004, the map amendment or rezone for Settlers View from RR5 to RR2.5, concurrent with the Settlers View preliminary plan, which is SP17006.
Thank you.
That being said, Cole, do you want to review the criteria for both the map amendment and preliminary plan?
No, but I will.
Never mind.
I'll click as you go.
Okay, with regards to the rezone, the approval criteria are in front of you there. This is pursuant to section 5.3.5 and as well as Colorado revised statutes. The application is in general conformance with the county master plan, or there has been a substantial change in the character of the neighborhood since the land was last zoned. The rezoning is in compliance with applicable statutory provisions, and the ones that are cited here are primarily notice requirements. The land use of the zone district is compatible with the existing permitted land uses and zone districts in all directions, and the site is suitable for its intended use. Now, the next one is for the preliminary plan. Just a reminder and education purposes with regards to the rezoning, you have broad discretion when it comes to zoning decisions. The preliminary plan is a subdivision type action, and compared to the rezoning, you have less discretion in making your decision. In other words, if the applicant has met all of the technical requirements of the subdivision regulations, then you really cannot deny. Now, with regards to the specific criteria in the preliminary plan, there are two sets of approval criteria. The first is for the waiver request, and then the second is the long list of approval criteria for the preliminary plan itself. The criteria for the waiver are that the waiver does not have the effect of nullifying the intent and purpose of the code. The waiver will not result in additional subsequent waivers. The waiver will not be detrimental to public health, safety, or welfare, or injurious to other properties. The conditions on which the request for a waiver is based are unique to the property for which the waiver is sought. A particular non-economic hardship to the owner would result from a strict application of the code. The waiver will not in any manner vary the zoning provisions of the code, and the waiver is not contrary to any provision of the master plan. Those are the criteria for the waiver. I'm not going to read through the long list of the approval criteria, but again, these are based on Section 7.2.1D2 of the Land Development Code, and they are as generally as follows: that the subdivision is in general conformance with the goals, objectives, and policies of the master plan. The subdivision is consistent with the purposes of the code. The subdivision is in conformance with subdivision design standards and the approved sketch plan. There is a sufficient water supply as set forth in Chapter 8. You will not have that finding today on this preliminary plan because Chapter 8 provides that for a preliminary plan, it can be approved and moved forward to final plat stage with an insufficiency finding as to water. The applicant's water attorney was out of country during the time that this application was coming forward. The state engineer's office reviewed, found concerns with regards to whether the water supply complies with the water court decree and wanted more explanation from the applicant. There has not been an opportunity to get both that clarification done and the water review completed in time for the hearing today. So the recommendation is for an insufficiency of water that works with these conditions because that's provided for in Chapter 8. Next, there's public sewage disposal system has been established, and if other methods are proposed, the system complies with state and local laws. Next, all areas that may involve soil or topographical conditions presenting hazards have been identified. Adequate drainage improvements are provided in the design. There is legal and physical access, or it will be provided. The subdivision has established an adequate level of compatibility by these various subcategories here, and I'm not going to read through these, that necessary services, including police, recreation, utilities, open space, transportation system, are or will be available to serve the subdivision. The subdivision provides evidence to show that the methods for fire protection comply with Chapter 6 of the code. And then finally, the subdivision meets other applicable sections of Chapters 6 and 8. So you will be hearing these together. However, as you know, you'll be taking separate actions on the rezoning and then the preliminary plan.
Thank you.
Okay. At the time of yesterday at business close, close. We only heard from one neighbor, and they were in opposition. However, today I believe Tracy did hand out two more letters from neighbors in opposition, and I believe they are here in the audience today. Okay. In terms of the application itself, the property owner is Ms. Brenda Brinkman, and I believe Brenda is here in the audience today, and her consultant is Jerome Hannigan and Associates, and he is here to do a brief presentation for both items. Staff has a very thorough presentation after Mr. Hannigan.
And I'll remember to...
No, I'm going to use the overhead. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. Jerry Hannigan, Hannigan and Associates, today representing Gary and Brenda Brinkman with a request for rezoning and minor subdivision. Nancy, if I could get the overhead, please. The property is up in the northern part of the county. And you'll recognize this is Highway 83. This is Highway 105 out of Monument. When it crosses 83, it becomes Walker Road. And then this, down here you see Fox Run Park. This is Hodgen Road running east. The road that ultimately accesses the property and connects between is Stepler Road, which runs through here. And I can give you a little closer image here, a better understanding of what's in the area. Again, obviously you can see the site is outlined. The property to the south here, this development is called Settlers Ranch, not to be confused with Settlers View. You'll notice that the access road coming through Settlers Ranch ends here. This handful of lots is currently developed and available. The road will continue, and Settlers Ranch is a PUD, it's zoned PUD, and Carrie might be able to provide a better definition of it, but everything from here on through up to Stepler, which is part of Settlers Ranch, is, I think, master platted, if you will. It's an approved plat that is recorded. It shows primarily this road, which comes up, follows that curve, comes up, touches this property right here for a couple hundred feet, and then winds up connecting with Stepler Road up here. It also shows lots. Because it's a PD, this plat is a little bit flexible. It's developed piece by piece. The property to the north here, these lots, is Grandview Subdivision. Grandview was built 10 or 12 years ago, platted 10 or 12 years ago, and this access road that you see that runs through the subdivision is Silver Knell. It's the name of the road. The property adjoining to the east, this L-shaped piece, is a piece that we're calling Abert Ranch. Belongs to another developer. It's in the works at the moment, in review at the county here, not to you yet. Also proposed RR 2.5 zoning with a lower density than what's proposed here. This parcel here, 40-acre strip here, is owned by Barbara Morin, one of the family members. The original ranch actually is the Hodgen Ranch. The property was this, I'll lay over here. This was the original ranch, and well, this goes back to 1936. The parcels now, these are 40s. These are owned by separate family members. Then this one is owned by Barbara. This, the original development piece, was a family member. This was a family member. Obviously, that has sold and developed. This has sold and is in the works. And then Brenda and Gary own this parcel here. The Hodgen Road to the south that accesses through here is, in fact, this road here, is, in fact, a tribute name to the family. It's not spelled the same, however. Not that that really matters. A little closer view again. As far as the zoning of the property is concerned, current zoning, of course, is R5, as was all of this and is most of the stuff to the east still. The proposal is to RR2.5. The items of particular concern or interest to you, obviously, are land use compatibility. This proposal is it's a total of 14 lots on 40.61 acres. The density, I think, comes out to 2.9, not quite 3 acres per lot. The use, obviously, residential is compatible with what you see already existing here. It's compatible with what exists down below it in Settlers Ranch and what's proposed or already master planned, platted, if you will, for this section that adjoins here. The parcel to the west, again, is residential in use. Parcel to the north is actually, I think, is vacant. Is that, there's no house on that, on this one? Right. But again, 40 acres. All this development that you see adjoining to the west here, this is Walden, various stages in Walden. And you can see these lots are small. They're roughly an acre. The reason why we have lots of that size is that we have a water and sewer district available. There's public facilities available for this. This section in here, these are larger, 2.5s, and this was, it's also a section of Walden, I've forgotten the name, but came through here a couple of years back. The proposed use on the adjoining Abert Ranch, also residential, also 2.5 minimum acres. So I think as far as land use is concerned, everything around it is residential. What's being proposed is residential. Suitability, we have, and I won't go into it. I remember Carrie said I was going to give you a short presentation, didn't she? We have all of the studies, soils, geology, all of that. There are no particular constraints as far as development at this level. So the property itself is suitable, and I can show you some. In the meantime, I'll show you a photograph. And this comes out of our soil and geology, which was done by NTEC. And I'll just slide that up. What you're looking at here in this photograph, this is Brenda and Gary's home, which we'll cite on the map for you. And this area in here is the ridge, if you will. There's a ridge that runs northwest and southeast through there. Grazing property. You can see in and around the house there are trees. The adjoining subdivision of Grandview lies just on the other side of that edge. Or this one's turning to the east. Again, grazing ground, scattered trees here, and these two flank each other here. Of course, you can see Pike's Peak in the background, and so you're looking westerly or southwesterly. And topography, generally mildly sloped, 5 to 8% slopes. Some occasions where it runs 10%. The development that you see back in through here is that development further to the west. Again, same thing here. There is development in there. That gives you some idea of what the property itself looks like. The more involved part of the discussion here concerns master plan compatibility. Of course, this is in the Black Forest Preservation Plan area, and the Black Forest Plan utilizes a drainage boundary for separating their planning areas. Planning Area 5 lies in the West Cherry Creek Basin. Planning Area 6 lies in the East Cherry Creek Basin, I'm sorry. And I'm going to show you this once I turn it upside down, it'll look better. This is the existing Silvernell Road as it comes up, and it dead ends at the property here with the cul-de-sac. This is where the road will extend from. If you look, you see this dashed line. This is approximately the location of the drainage basin boundary that the master plan utilizes to separate land use areas. Those areas to the west, the master plan suggests, should be residential in nature. They are. Should be of a lot size, minimum 1 acre, which is what you have in Walden, if you have sufficient facilities to support it. Otherwise, 2.5, frankly, because otherwise you can't go lower than 2.5 for individual well and septic. In the eastern basin, the comprehensive plan suggests these should be 5 acre parcels. Of course, the property line, which is here, doesn't follow the basin boundary. And so we had to accommodate that in some reasonable fashion. And we did two things, basically. What I did, first of all, was this is approximately 10 acres that lies in the East Cherry Creek Basin. And so utilizing that 10 acres, if it were 5 acre sites, there'd be 2 sites permittable. And then if there's 30 acres in the balance of the property, that would be 12 sites. And so 12 and 2 is 14. We have water sufficient for 15. We restricted the development to 14. In addition, in this area here, two things have occurred. Number one, in this area, we have accommodated the existing house, which is Brenda's home, which you can see lies right here. Okay? And we have addressed, again, the master plan issue of density, if you will, by creating lots in this segment that are larger than the lots on the other side. They're in the threes, whereas the lots on the other side are minimum 2.5, although they do change. And let me see if I can get a copy of to show you. The development itself got to look in the right place. Development itself again accesses from the existing Silvernell, which comes down here. This cul-de-sac would be removed. Silvernell will continue and turn and come to the boundary. Now, there is no other existing thoroughfare that we can connect to from this property. The property has otherwise been landlocked. What you see here is Settlers Ranch Road as it is currently in this master plan. And it comes up, turns, it adjoins the property to the east, the adjoining property, not ours, and then continues and ultimately extends up here to Stepler. In order for Silvernell to ultimately continue and loop through, which it has to do, it needs to connect through the adjoining property and into then what amounts to a third property, which is Settlers Ranch, and it continues in from there. So for approval of this, we have to have a deviation and we have to have a waiver. And they both go to the existing Silvernell Drive and ultimately its extension through this property. The deviation and waiver have to do with the length of a dead-end street and the number of lots on a dead-end street. Currently, that is 1,600 feet and 25 lots. This exceeds, there are 17 lots currently in Grandview, and then this adds 14 lots to that if it were all built out without a connection. And the length of it is over 3,000 feet. We're adding, I think it's 898 feet to it here. Next project, the Abert Ranch project, which is in review, is this. Its connection would be in this fashion here. We're not talking about that, obviously, but. So there is a requirement for approval of a waiver and a deviation. The county engineer has, in fact, given her blessing to it. Obviously, you need to. But basically, that's it. I think I might. Access is the biggie. Yep. That's about all I have. Questions?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Curry, thank you. You correctly identified some of the concerns in the master plan as part of it. And one of the things I'd like to know is, as I look at the language in the planning unit six, which is this northeast portion of the property, the language. Well, it's interesting because it's flexible in saying it should, yeah. But it's less flexible in saying strictly. Right. And what it says, and I quote, is that if development does occur, it should be strictly held to 1 per 5 acres.
Right.
And so one of the things that we can do when we look at consistency with the master, it certainly is not consistent with that, but one of the things we could find is that the character of the area has changed. And so one of the things that will help me understand that better in context of this is the property immediately to the north where Silvernell Lane goes through, what are the size of the lots that, so As you see the lots to the north part of this property, all along the ones that fall within Planning Unit 6 in that property, are there any lots that are smaller than 5 acres?
Yes and no. And the reason I say that is because it depends at least to some degree on where exactly you decide to draw the boundary between the two planning areas, that is the location of the drainage basin boundaries. Basically, in Grandview, at the east end, and if you look at the vicinity map here, at the very east end There are 5-acre lots. I think they're 5.08. The lots in through this area are smaller. The lots vary in size. I would tell you that, well, you can see the topography. This is a relatively wider ridge. I would tell you, and this is basically a bump or a pimple, if you will. The ridge actually comes up here, it passes the house, turns off there, comes through right about here. It follows a little further over and it goes north. It turns north again up here. So some of the lots here in Grandview that straddle that boundary are of varying sizes. Don't know what the area of this lot is. It's not 5 acres.
Right. But specifically, if I look at that one that looks like, I can't read it quite, 0, 11, 13, 12 there to the upper right part
right.
of the...
Right.
That is 5 acres or more, correct? And all the ones to the east. And it seems as though the division above it, the Grandview subdivision, it seems as though all the properties that fall to the planning unit 6 side, which is the east side of that mm-hmm. boundary, mm-hmm. are generally 5 acres or more. And what I'm trying to figure out is, are there, in trying to make a determination as to whether the character of the area has changed,
right.
I would have a whole lot less problem if we had 5-acre lots in this area marked A on your
Yeah.
plan here. If those were 5-acre lots, I wouldn't have an issue here with master plan compliance. Mm-hmm. But I'm struggling to find it unless there are other lots in Planning Unit 6 that are smaller.
There are, and that exists both in Grandview and also down in Settlers Ranch to the south. They're PUDs. Those lot sizes vary, and the lots that may straddle where that boundary is vary. This boundary was not in this location at the time Grandview was done. It's in this location because the road's physically built there. Okay, that changed it. The location of the boundary, even if you accept that this is exactly where the boundary is on this property, does not present an ability to create 5-acre lots, 2 5-acre lots in this area and create lots that are, that in any way meet the code or that would be reasonable. So while I think there is a difference in lot sizes in the adjoining properties as they straddle that boundary, I think the spirit and the intent of the master plan is upheld, with the idea alone that we took this area, said, well, that's approximately 10 acres. If it were 5s, we'd have 2. And then when we actually create the lots, these are larger lots, 3-something, 3-something.
Okay.
Obviously, I also had to accommodate the existing house.
Okay, and I have just one more.
Go ahead, please.
I'm also very concerned about the waiver part of this and the dead end.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot of the discussion relative to its acceptability is the expectation that it's going to be temporary in nature. But that presumes that the Abert Ranch rezone and plats and all of those things are approved.
Right.
Which they might not be. I'm just saying that it's a possible outcome.
I agree.
If that were not done, then is there any option for getting the extra access? Because you have a whole lot of lots on that long dead end. And like I said, if the Abert Ranch piece had already been approved,
sure.
This would be a whole lot less of an issue, because then we would know for sure that it was temporary.
Sure.
Right now we're making a presumption, but I don't think that we can make that presumption. So,
I'm sure you can. No, I understand, and that's a perfectly reasonable concern. The existing road, and I, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know whether or not the current standard of 1,600 feet and 25 lots was in place at that time or not, but the existing road is there, and it's all we have. We're stuck with it. The only way to complete a loop is to do just what we're showing, and that is to extend it to the boundary. There are two points I think I would make. Number one, the biggest concern, I think practical concern for that, is emergency services. And this is in the Tri-Lakes Monument Fire Protection District. We went out of our way working with them. They're on board. They don't have a problem with this. Secondly, there would be an obvious concern with, as you expressed, with traffic, and that's a question really of volume. Are you putting too many vehicles on an existing road? We're putting more on, no question about it, but the road itself can handle it. Our traffic study addresses it. The extension ultimately has to happen somewhere along the line. So while it's temporary, you're absolutely right. We don't know how long temporary is. Grandview's been there for 10 years. So, you know. But I don't think that it's unreasonable to expect the continuance of Silvernell to occur and ultimately connect up with Settlers Ranch. It is part of the discussion that's been involved in this discussion with Settlers Ranch at the time, and of course that all went through. There isn't any other way to make a connection, and so it ultimately has to be this way. Hopefully that helps out. I understand the concern. It is temporary. No, I don't know how long temporary is. Don't know. Any development at all on Abert Ranch property will require this connection. I mean, it's already planned, but it would be required one way or the other. And then the other thing I would suggest to you is that it is something that county staff and county engineer have approved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have a question for the attorney on the same subject later, but for right now, I'm finished. Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes.
If I could go back to this map. The first one, the one you just had, sorry. I'm a little confused because of following that division between 5 and 6. It looks like all the land to the east of there would have been in 6. And yet these, potential developments seem to all have 2.5s.
You're talking about Abert Ranch now?
Yeah, Abert Ranch and then this one to the south. Or is 3s.
This.
Yeah.
And again, this is under review at the moment. This is Settlers Ranch, and it is part of that master plat exhibit. I think there's some flexibility in those, but not much.
Well, but can you see why I'm a little confused?
Yeah, I...
Because if 6 says 5 acres, then... Are we to understand that these other folks are coming in with 2s and 3s and another rezone? And see, if we're supposed to judge if it's compatible, And it's against the plan, number six. It's really kind of confusing.
Well, we're not talking about this.
Well, isn't that in six?
It's within East Cherry Creek, yes. East Cherry Creek drainage basin, yes. But the size of these lots is not determined at this point.
Right.
It's in another development.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, no, so, but all I'm saying is because the map looks that way, it looks like those sizes are very similar, but in reality, if this commission were to say, five, it's in zone six, five is good, then the compatibility would be different. I guess it's like compatibility question.
Yeah, okay. Residential here, residential here, residential here and here, residential here. Residential use to residential use, they're all rural, okay? So the use itself, I believe, is compatible. The question you're bringing up is lot sizing relative to the master plan. And the master plan, again, doesn't follow property boundaries. It's generic in that fashion. And so it says, if you're in basically the East Cherry Creek drainage, those parcels, should they be subdivided, should be 5-acre lots. There are parcels in the East Cherry Creek drainage basin that are not 5-acre lots. In the basin to the west, the plan suggests those should be minimum 1 acre with supporting infrastructure. These, of course, are 2.5. The ones adjoining are basically 2.5. So I think you can find compatibility there. Again, this is not the subject of discussion, and even if they were 5-acre lots, as you're suggesting they should be, 5-acre residential site, I think, is still compatible to 2.5-acre residential site. That's my point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I was really talking about faithfulness to the zoning, or faithfulness to the planning. Yeah.
Right, and the master plan, of course, the master plan was done, I think, 1987 is when the current Black Forest plan is. But the master plan speaks to overall areas that are defined by other than property boundaries. And so anytime there is a difference between a line, in this case, a drainage basin boundary, and a property boundary, you have to adjust in some fashion. Does that help?
Mr. Chair, I have one more question.
Yes, Mr. Curry.
Sorry, as I look at the criteria for waiver approval, there's one more that I'd like you to address, and that is that we're required to find, in approving a waiver, that there is a particular non-economic hardship to the owner if we didn't approve it, if it was strictly applied. Can you talk to what that non-economic hardship would be if the waiver was not applied?
Well, obviously the development itself might not go forward.
Right, but that's economic.
Well, maybe yes, maybe no, but okay. But beyond that, this connection never exists, doesn't happen. If this connection doesn't happen, this one can't happen, and this one can't happen, and you've stopped everything in the whole area. There's no way to help this existing situation in Grandview without making this connection. Now this, from here, this is cast in stone, if you will. It will occur. It's only a question of time. It's been approved, it will occur. This will occur if something's approved here. This will occur if something's approved here. Otherwise, neither will occur. I think there's, from a county standpoint, I think there's a reasonable expectation that it is in the best interests of all of the people in the county to have this connection exist. That help?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for Mr. Hannigan? Anything else you want to add?
Not unless you have other questions at the moment, anyway.
Okay. Ms. Parsons?
I can leave that there if that
Mr. Hannigan, on any of your exhibits there that aren't a part of the planning file already, if you would leave copies of those at the end of the presentation.
Right.
Okay. Carrie Parsons, again, for Planning and Community Development, and the review engineer on the team is Gilbert LaForce. Again, the request is for that rezone for the 40.61 acres from the RR5 zone district to the RR2.5, which essentially changes the lot size requirements from a 5-acre lot size down to the 2.5-acre lot size. The applicants are requesting a preliminary plan approval for 14 single-family residences and that waiver, and as Cole mentioned, water sufficiency is not requested and is deferred to the final plat. Okay, let's get some perspective. So this is the site here, and the Walden Preserve site is the hot pink or planned unit development site. These lots down in this area here that immediately abut this property range from about 5 acres down to 4.25. This entire subdivision here is known as Walden 3, and it is actually zoned half acre, RR0.5. This site here is a school site. This area remains vacant. This is the Grandview subdivision, which currently has 17 lots on it, public right-of-way, which is Silvernell. The first two lots on this in this subdivision are not counted towards the maximum number of lots included in the waiver because they have access to Stepler Road. It is important to mention at the time of the Grandview subdivision, staff in working with the previous applicant had the foresight to plan ahead and to provide access to future development in this area. And a stub out was actually platted as future right-of-way, and that is identified here, so I've indicated this is an arrow. That same foresight was done when Walden Preserve was being developed, and there is a stub out here. Again, there was also a stub out here, and then a stub out here. Stepler Road is limited to its access points, this being one, and then future connection here, which would be Settlers Ranch Road. And then that's reflected on the preliminary plan. A little bit of background. The area was zoned A5, which was known as Rural in 65. It was renamed from A5 to RR3 in 1991. RR3 is still that 5-acre zoning requirement that the land exists today. We just had a nomenclature change in 2007 when we adopted our more current code. The Grandview subdivision is zoned plan unit development to the north, and it was required to construct that Silvernell Drive to this property. The Settlers Ranch development is currently zoned PUD, and that was also required to extend the Settlers Ranch Road up to the adjacent property, which is being called Abert, which is not scheduled for hearing at this time, and it is under review for a rezone from RR5 to 2.5, RR2.5, so 2.5-acre lots is what they're proposing, and they're also proposing a preliminary plan with that. This is I took a lot of the existing development plats and kind of put them in so we had an anticipated connectivity map so that you could understand what was planned for traffic. So this is the Silvernell Drive connection as it comes into the applicant's proposed subdivision. Then connecting to a future development, perhaps. It is undetermined if it will be zoned to rezoned to RR 2.5. It is currently RR 5. Regardless, if it was developed as RR 5 or another zone district, this connection does need to happen. And then this is that. This is actually from the recorded master plat exhibit. This is Settler's View, and the master plat exhibit basically broke a approved final plat into smaller portions under a resolution that was adopted by the previous board in the time of our financial downturn, if you will. That board adopted a resolution that enabled developments that were already approved but not yet recorded to break out their subdivisions in smaller plats, so it wasn't as expensive for those developers to record the plats and do those improvements. So those are actually called master plat exhibits. Master plat exhibits do not create lots, but they cannot be changed. And I should mention those additional final plats as they come in, those are actually approved by our director, and they do not come before the Planning Commission and the board because they've already been through the Planning Commission and board twice. In terms of the land development code, staff did find that the rezone met the requirements of the 5.3.5B. And we did find that it meets the requirements of Chapter 6, 7, and 8 for the preliminary plan, as indicated in your staff reports. The policy plan, the policy goals that staff looked at with this application are on your screen, basically. In a nutshell, encourage new development, which is contiguous and compatible with previously developed areas, incorporation of buffers or transitions between areas of varying land use and density, support development which complements the unique environmental conditions, and encourage patterns of growth and development which complement the region's unique natural environments and which reinforce community character. Staff's analysis. The minimum of the 2.5-acre lots, including the 3-acre lots at the northeastern boundary as depicted on the preliminary plan, staff found that that did provide a transition. And Nancy, if I could switch to the overhead, please. I'm going to tie in Commissioner Curry's question. Oh, no. Sorry, my iPad is having a little trouble zooming in. I apologize. Okay, great. If we look at this lot here, it's 2.5 acres.
Could you reposition your iPad based on what shows up on the screen? Thank you.
I apologize. This lot here is 2.5 acres. This lot here is 2.5 acres, 2.5 acres, just a little bit over 2.5 acres, 2.5 acres, and then these are the 5-acre lots. So that is how staff got to that finding in terms of transition and compatibility with that. And then looking down to the south, because these are not recorded plats, although that master plat is recorded, these lots in this area are 2.5 acres. Again, with that transition to the east going up to 5 acres at Stepler's Road. Can I have the PowerPoint, please? Okay, and I think I've already basically talked about this, the Walden Preserve development on Central Services having the RR 0.5 or half acre lot size to the west, or to the west, where the Walden Preserve has the 2.5 acre to 5 acre lots adjacent to Barbara Moorhead's property, further to the west of this applicant's property. We've talked about access. Black Forest Preservation Plan. I wanted to provide you an actual GIS, our GIS system, our aerial system with the drainage basin map. So this is actually in our GIS separating the East Cherry Creek from the West Cherry Creek. This is the North Grassland subarea, so in this area here. And then the Spruce Hills Highway Area 83 subarea, which is Unit 5, which is in the remainder. So you have some. Again, the Spruce Hill Highway 83 corridor emphasis in this unit should be on residential uses which preserve and complement the unique landscape features by focusing on the forested rather than the open areas. To accomplish this, clustering should be encouraged. Large-scale tract housing should be avoided. Densities comparable to those in the Walden 3 subdivision, one dwelling unit per 1 acre would be appropriate if carefully sited and adequate services can be provided. Using this planning unit should be consistent with non-urban development. Staff had no issues with the subarea 5. The applicant is proposing generally 2.5 acres on well and septic here. The northern Glassland subarea, as Mr. Curry pointed out earlier, the entire area is not recommended for development or subdivision at this time. If low-density residential development does take place, overall density should be strictly held to one dwelling unit per 5 acres. In terms of the small area plan analysis pertaining to unit area 6, staff utilized the changing character of the Grandview subdivision with the 2.5 acre lots to the north, the 2.5 acre lots to the south, and found that it could be held compatible. And then Gilbert can discuss the drainage and erosion and traffic for this project.
Gilbert LaForce, engineering. So in this picture, they've already mentioned property straddles West Cherry Creek and East Cherry Creek. It's this blue line is about the approximate location. Right now, both drainage basins are unstudied. So in the later platting process, there's no drainage or bridge fees associated with those basins. And development runoff on the West Cherry Creek portion of this development is proposed to go into a full spectrum detention pond for their water quality and detention requirements. And on the East Cherry Creek, on the drainage board for Abert Ranch, which is this adjacent subdivision that's in review, they're accounting for the minimal development runoff from this lots on their detention pond sizing. And on transportation, it's already been discussed quite a bit. The extension of Silver Nell Drive, we put in a condition of approval on the preliminary plan to make sure that stub out or that construction or development will go up to the property boundary so that the Abert Ranch has a location to connect to. And that with the Abert Ranch, that's anticipating to connect that Silver Knoll down to the Settlers Ranch Road for when it does come in. And they already mentioned Silver Ranch Road, that's going to connect to Stepler Road to the east and Hodgen to the south, and that pretty much provides the two points of access for, or creates that two points of access for Grandview subdivision, this the Settlers View and Abert Ranch. And what the other part that hasn't really been mentioned is Stepler Road on the existing Silver Nell connection. To the south of that is paved, and then to the north is gravel road. From the traffic study, the existing trips on that is already at about 265. A gravel road design trips for the daily trips is 200. So it's already a little bit over the capacity. And so on the final plat application, the traffic study is gonna need to provide a bit more analysis regarding what improvements might be needed north of the Silver Nell, and if actual road improvements might be required, or it might be an escrow for their fair share proportion for what's needed to be upgraded on Silver Nell. And that's going to get looked at also with Abert Ranch, just because of these three subdivisions are going to be generating all this additional traffic on that roadway and stuff. And I think that's all my presentation. If you have any questions for engineering, I'll turn it back to Gary.
I'm not seeing any questions. Thanks, right. Gil.
Thanks.
Are there any more questions for staff? I'm just getting it to a vicinity map so we have some references for questions.
Yes, Ms.
I have one more question. I guess I'm really slow about this. About this northern grassland subarea, it says the applicants are proposing to plat lots at a minimum size of 3 acres, which exceeds the recommended lot size of 2.5 acres. I get stuck. What am I missing? That I thought it said strictly five. So obviously I'm disconnecting something here.
you're not making a disconnect. Staff has a typo in there, and that should say that on page 5, middle paragraph, it should read, the applicants are proposing to plat lots within the northern grassland subarea at a minimum lot size of 3 acres, which is not the word exceed, which is under the recommended lot size of 5 acres.
Thank you. Okay.
Any other questions? With that, would anyone like to take a 5-minute break before we finish up? All right, we will take a 5-minute break. We'll come back to order. Is there anyone, you finished your presentation?
Yes, I am, unless you have more questions for me.
I think we exhausted our questions.
Okay. Again, I apologize for that typo, and we will get that fixed before board. It was a glaring typo that I should have got, but I didn't, so apologize.
Ms. Friedman is very good.
Yes.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in favor of this item? Is there anyone who would like to speak in opposition? Please come forward, state your name, sign in, and you've been here long enough, you know what the procedure is.
My name is Mary Green, and I live at the top of where this, both developments are kind of, I'm right in the middle. I got both developments going to develop in front of me. Pardon me? This one that we're talking about and the one to the left that you call it Abert?
Okay.
Yep.
You can use the mouse there to show us where you're at.
Yep, I'm right here.
Okay.
So I have a lot of concerns about the value of my property. I didn't know any of this was going to happen when we bought the home. And the traffic, I know that everybody has a right to develop their land and make their profits. I guess I'd be happier if it's a bigger lot like you were stuck on. I'm stuck on that too. I have a lot of questions of what it's going to look like, how close to my lot can they build? Are the trees that are there going to be taken down? I guess they have a right to do whatever on their own property. So it affects my value to my house, plus my view. So I guess that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Anyone else who'd like to speak in opposition?
My name's Debbie Davidson, and I live on Silvernail Drive, right, what happens to this mouse? Right there. Does that show? So if you look at the drainage line, it goes through Molly's, right across the back of mine, and then across this way. I think I have more questions than opposition. I'm wondering if they're going to have a building, like Molly, a building envelope where they have to be so far from the edges of their lots. Am I going to end up with somebody's deck looking down into my bedroom, so to speak? And you said there was a concern about the water. I'd like to make sure that my well's not going to be impacted when they start digging wells up the hill from me. And then I guess the biggest issue I have is I have no problem that once these 14 or how many ever homes are built, the residents using our street to get to their homes. I do have a big problem with 14 homes worth of construction equipment going up and down in front of my house for God knows how many years. And if there's any way to have a different access, I would prefer that, because we know big concrete trucks, big pieces of wood and digging equipment and all that can really tear up a street, and it's going to be very noisy. So that's where my opposition is mostly. I don't want to become part of a construction area. I bought the last home that was for sale, well, no, next to last home that was for sale on Silver Knell at the time, thinking I was not going to be in a construction area. And I have a son that's very sound sensitive. We moved out where it was quiet for a reason, and I have a very big concern about construction traffic. So that's about all I have.
Well, the bad news is it's not your street, it's the county's street. The good news is it's not your street, and the county will maintain it. So it'll all come out in the wash.
I wish they'd plow it sooner.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Would the applicant like to add any comments at this point in time before we move on?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my first comment is I wish District 38, where I live, would stop closing the school when it snows, because that way they don't plow my street. However, that's a little off the point. Usual concerns you would expect, obviously. Home value, none of the homes that are going to be constructed in this particular proposed subdivision are going to be of any lesser value than the homes that already exist in Grandview Estates. The concern about setbacks is a valid concern. The setbacks in this comply with the zone district and are similar to the setback requirements in Grandview Estates. I have no reason to think that anybody who might want to build on that northernmost one lot would have any reason to want to be closer to that boundary than any other for any reason. So I would think they're going to be 100 feet away anyway. The concern that was expressed about well and water, you folks understand that. There is sufficient water. We have adjudication and we have an augmentation plan approved. That's not part of your finding at this point, but it will be going forward. There won't be an impact to the adjoining property wells from this or some loss of water from it. Again, the only other thing I would go back to, because you guys seem to have some concern about the master plan's boundary, I would tell you again, there isn't any way for us to physically get to that portion that is in the northern grasslands, number one. And number two, if it is 10 acres, or if we made it 10 acres, I can't reasonably get lots that would comply with the county's code in any fashion. Number three, we've reduced the density on the entire project so as to accommodate that. In other words, if they were 5-acre lots, there'd be two of them there, and the balance would be 12. Our total is 14. We're not asking for 15, 14. So we've accommodated it there. And then the lots in that northern and northeastern portion are larger than the lots in the rest. So that would be my comments. If you have any questions?
I'm not hearing any. Thank you, Mr. Hager.
Thank you.
Nancy, can I have the overhead? I'd like to present the letter that was just recently received by the state engineer's office to address the, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your last name. Mrs. Green's concerns about the water. Oh, okay, Mrs. Davidson. We did receive a letter from the state engineer's office. Unfortunately, because at the time the staff report was being crafted, we did not have this letter. Therefore, staff, in working with the county attorney's office, made the determination to defer the finding of sufficiency until the final plat. And so, but in summary, the state engineer's office, their concerns were addressed when Mr. Worley returned to the country and was able to contact the state engineer's office.
Thank you.
And then on that, the setbacks, the opposition had asked what the setbacks would be for this zoning district if it were to be approved. And the minimum lot size, again, 2.5 acres, 25 feet front building setback, 25 feet rear building setback, and a 15-foot side. And then that maximum building height would be 30 feet. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any discussion with the commission?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Greeley. Curry. Curry.
Thank you. I got to be honest. I was originally not finding this in compliance with the master plan because of the lot sizes. But as I look at the designs in the areas and I listen to the testimony about the variability of where that border is, and I look at the lots in the division just north, I notice that all of the lots that are wholly within Planning Unit 6 completely are 5 acres, but those that are along the border are smaller than that and consistent with what's being proposed here. So I got to be honest, my initial concern about compliance with the master plan has been alleviated because these properties are in fact along the border. I'm not, you know, we may have different discussions for different applications in the future, but for these right here along the border, I'm kind of okay with the compliance just because of that issue. I do have very serious concerns about the preliminary plan, however, not related to water, but related to this waiver. And in that vein, I have a question for the attorney relative to the applicability of the conditions that we're required to find to approve a waiver. And one of those, I have two. The first is that the conditions upon which the request is made must be unique to this property and not to any other. This property is only asking to develop 14 properties, which would not require a waiver on a cul-de-sac. It only requires a waiver because of an adjoining property which has other homes on it. Can we legally find that the conditions that require this waiver are wholly unique to this property? Since those conditions are 16 homes or more than 16 homes or 25 homes or whatever it is. And I know, since for the record, for the minutes, while you look at that, I'm just going to read the condition. It says that one of the criteria is we must find that, quote, the conditions upon which the request for a waiver is based are unique to the property for which the waiver is sought and are not applicable to other property. And so I'm trying to figure out, since they only have 14 homes, that would not require a waiver. I think they only require the waiver because of the other property.
They can't make the connection. But they can't make the connection unless they can connect to Silvernell and to get out. And in order to do that, you've got to count all of those properties in Grand View along with those in this development. So they're without doing the waiver, they're almost penalized because of the timing of their application.
I, I fully understand that. And if Hebert had completed, or if the Settlers Ranch to the south had completed, this might not be an issue, but it is now. And I'm just trying to say, from a legal perspective, are the conditions for this waiver solely unique to this property for the legal interpretation of that condition?
I would be willing to defend it.
Okay. And then the second question in the same vein is that approving the waiver cannot be detrimental, and I'll quote, to the public safety, health, or welfare, or injurious to other property. And if we approve the waiver to do that, and we're looking at things like, you know, fire and emergency response, those sorts of things, having the additional homes there could be interpreted as being injurious to those. Is that true or false?
I think that's subjective.
Okay.
I'm not going to give you a true or false answer on that.
Okay.
You could look at it the other way. It's similar to what I've said earlier. Without the connection, if Hebert is developed, Hebert's going to have the same issue. I mean, this is kind of a symbiotic type issue with these three developments here.
I fully understand. I very much appreciate the answer. I'm just saying that I'm just trying to make sure that we are on firm legal ground relative to approving this when we're required to find all of the conditions, and I just want to make sure those are legally sufficient to do so.
Again, it's one that I'd be willing to defend.
I understand, and that's I accept the answer. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, if the county attorney is willing to defend it, I think that answers the question.
Can I put in an input on that regarding the public safety? So on the deviation request that was approved by the county engineer regarding the length of the cul-de-sac, one of the criteria on the EC on the engineering criteria manual is that we needed to have written approval from the fire district that says they're okay with how long that is, that they'd be able to serve it. And the applicant did provide that letter, which is why the deviation was approved by the county engineer for that length. So,
well, if the county engineer's happy with it, it answers the question. Anything else? Is there, first item will be the rezone, P17004. Is there a motion? Ms. Treese.
Agenda item 5, P17004, map amendment rezone, Settlers View. I move for approval based on the new standard resolution, page 27, with three conditions and two notations.
Is there a second?
I second.
Second from Dillon, Ms. Dillon. All right, let me get my notes here. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any questions, any comments? I'll restate it. This is item 5, P17004, map amendment rezone. Motion is for approval with, according to page 27, of three conditions and two notations, and we do not need to deal with the waiver on this item. The waiver comes in on the next one. So with that, we'll go through the vote. Mr. Curry.
Aye.
Mr. Wood.
Aye.
Ms. Treese.
Aye.
Ms. Dillon.
Aye.
Ms. Friedman.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. And item 5, P17004, is approved unanimously. Now let's move on to item 6.
Mr. Chair, are you ready for a motion on that?
Yes, I am.
Okay, agenda item 6, SP 17006, preliminary plan for Settlers View. I move approval based on the new standard resolution, page 25, with 8 conditions and 3 notations.
And the waiver?
And the waiver of water sufficiency is not needed at this time.
No, this is their waiver for the...
Waiver would be for the number of lots on the cul-de-sac.
Yes. And is there a separate thing besides the waiver? I forget the word.
No, sir.
Deviation.
The deviation has already been, excuse me, the deviation was approved prior to this item being scheduled for planning commission by the county engineer.
Okay. Very good. With the waiver. All right.
Mr. Chair, there should be a finding of insufficiency for water.
I'll amend that to find an insufficiency of water.
Okay, so we have that motion. Is there a second?
Second.
From Ms. Dillon. So the item to be, any discussion? The item to be voted on is item 6, SP 17006, preliminary plan for approval with 8 conditions, 3 notations, and insufficiency of water and waiver for the length of the cul-de-sac. And I'll go through the vote. Mr. Curry?
No.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Ms. Dries?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
Ms. Friedman?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye, and that item is approved, 5-1. And Mr. Curry, would you like to explain your objection any more than you already have?
Only simply to say that the only other aspect that I haven't already talked about, I'm very concerned about this waiver for the traffic, but I worry that we're making presumptions about this Abert Ranch that may not come true and completions of roads that may not come true. And that's the part that I worry about, is what happens if those don't happen and things that we presume are temporary may not be. So that's the reason.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned.
Oh, thank you, Jim.